You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. We are here tonight to discuss Delphi. As many of you know, there was a crime committed clear back in 2017 involving Abby and Libby, who were young girls who were viciously murdered. They were literally had their throats slit. This crime went unsolved for, unfortunately, many years until very recently a man named Richard Allen was not only arrested, but he was just convicted this year of these heinous crimes.
Someone might have confessed, you know, back in 2017, but more on that later.
We are going to get to that. He was convicted. Many of us who followed this case very closely from the onset had a lot of questions. I've been, along with many others, just very concerned about whether justice was served in this. And it's not because I don't think the jury did a good job. It's not because I don't think that they did the best they could under the circumstances. It really comes down to how Richard Allen was treated from the time of his arrest, really up and through the entirety of this trial and the proceedings. So today we are thrilled to be joined by Lawyer Schiff. Love the Schiff. He comes in hot with his takes and he's got his kitty there. So we are going to go over the most recent filing. Essentially, it's a motion to wrong or to correct wrongs that the defense says occurred. They want the verdict vacated at the end or at least a hearing. We're going to go through each of the points and have Schiff break it down for us. Welcome, Schiff. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. And this is one of those rare cases where FBI mom and criminal defense dad can get together and be like, yeah, we need to keep looking at this one. This is not one that screams, yeah, this is the job well done all around. No, not at all.
This
case, yeah, has exposed so many of the things that frustrate all parts of the spectrum of criminal justice for different reasons. And it's like they just decided to put them on the super cake for the new year. Because what we're seeing here has upset so many people, from my friends that are really pro-state, pro-law enforcement, to those who are much more of the civil libertarian end. And that's because of this completely unique combination of circumstances that involves what is undoubtedly a horrific murder of two young girls, something that should absolutely grab the population by the face and say, hey, pay attention to this.
Yeah, absolutely, Schiff. And you're right. I mean, I back the blue, but I don't back incompetence. And I try not to Monday morning, quarterback, because that's never a good thing. But you certainly have to call in question on this case so many things. But we're going to try to limit really this segment with what exactly is being said. And legally, does it have any legs, or is this really just setting up the appeal? So let's start with
last Tuesday, I believe, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
So let's set this up with the first argument. And that discusses that Richard Allen was arraigned without counsel, even though he had counsel. Talk to us about this. Is this just really throwing it out there, or where are we on that?
No, this is a fundamental constitutional thing. It's one of the bright line rules that still kind of actually exists in criminal law. Well, one of the issues that every criminal practitioner sees is the expectation of the public versus the reality of law enforcement and police. Like Miranda, everybody screams, "Oh, I wasn't Miranda." Well, you weren't needed to be Mirandized. That wasn't what was needed to happen given what the situation was. This highlights one of the really sacrosanct rules, and that if you are represented, you can't be brought to court without your lawyer. Your lawyer gets to be present. Your lawyer is your established, selected, lawful mouthpiece. They're also your lawful confidant and counsel to specifically discuss what you're being appeared for, to answer questions, and to make sure that your First Amendment, your freedom of speech, can be effectively used during due process, another thing that is constitutionally required. So what happened here is the allegation that Richard Allen, very kind of early-ish in the process, was brought before the court for an arraignment. And it's not just that he didn't have lawyers. And there are ways, and believe it or not, exceptions to if you're just handing someone documents maybe for an arraignment without a lawyer present. But that's not what the defense is alleging here. What the defense is alleging is that Richard Allen had a lawyer and the state knew he had a lawyer. And if the state knows you have a lawyer, it is entirely improper for you to communicate between. That is just completely wrong. It will get your case kicked almost every single time. There's no excuse for the state. And it's a royal we. The state is imputed to be all state agents to discuss your or with your client anything without their lawyer present. And it's a really big problem when it's one of these formal court appearances as well. So this may seem minor to some people. And I know I've already heard from some people say, no, judge is going to find an exception. Just watch this. There's no actual harm that was inflicted on Richard Allen. This is no bias or prejudice occurred because of this administrative. See, that's where push comes to shove when you get to the federal courts. And that's where a denial of a right like that can easily end up after exhausting a politicized state process. So that's not something that just wash away.
I find this very interesting, Chef, because in my experience, I've never seen an attorney not there at arraignment. Even when they didn't have an attorney, they got an attorney.
They throw one in. You don't need a lot of lawyering going on.
You're on duty. You're there. I never have seen a defendant stand without an attorney. So, of course, it jumped off the page to me in that respect. But then I like you, just doing some research, wondering if it's really going to have legs, because how do you remedy it? I mean, look at how far down the line we are. And did it really cause him harm, if you will?
Yeah, and those are really good questions. I'd want to see, really, this is such a rare issue and something that really, I can't imagine a judge being willing to move forward without saying, hey, we're missing somebody here. Like that's part of what I don't get. Where's the checks and the balances? Isn't a deputy saying, hey, we can't start until his lawyer is present? That's literally how ridiculous this is. I don't know what the remedy is in Georgia or Indiana, but it could be something as severe, given its fundamental nature, as a dismissal and go back to square one, because unfortunately, bold violations require bold remedies. And it's not that the state couldn't have done lots of things with the case after, but if they broke the toy and it's busted.
But Schiff, we both know this is going before Judge Gohl. Judge Gohl, in the simplest, in my belief, of rulings, that, for instance, when she took away the attorneys and was overruled by the Supreme Court of Indiana, which many of us believed would happen, some didn't, but I staunchly believed that that would come back around. Judge Gohl is not going to take any remedy for any of these, I don't think, not to kind of already give up the, already show what's going to probably happen. But do you agree with me?
Yeah, I especially about your assessment of Judge Gull and kind of what's been happening. And I don't know the motivation behind her rulings, but they are so outside what even my more kind of established envelope pushing judges would think is being reasonable. What she's facing now, refusing to take action, really starts to create verifiable issues that what's going on here? Is there something behind her? And that's not correct for the process. These aren't hard questions. And I believe most other judges in Indiana, as well as nationally, see her rulings and really question why and how they got to this point, given how more proper and straightforward other decisions would have been. And you're right, it's tough to armchair quarterback judges, but these are fundamental issues that anybody can see would impact the fairness of a trial. And she's going to have to deal with the remedies. And knowing that, what does she do? Knowing that she's going to be facing an appellate court and a Supreme Court that have already shut her down, is she interested in pushing her agenda as a judge with judicial control, which there are political movements inside the bench, where there are bench movements where, oh, we want the Court of Appeals to start treating us more like this or that. Is this a political angle on her for judicial politics, or is she trying to really make some other statement? I don't know, but there's a lot going through my mind.
Well, it brings me back to really quick to stay on this point. Do you recall when the guards were recording the meetings that Richard Allen was having with his attorneys? And many of us, and like I said, I am very usually pro prosecution as long as the facts are there. I was just sickened by that you can record it. Well, they said, well, there wasn't really audio, but it was recorded. I'm like, yeah, you can read lips, you know, really. It
wasn't expectations of privacy. And you're right, because it's affecting something that are multiple sacred obligations. You get privacy with your counselors, just like you get it with your priest, just like you get it with your spouse. You get privacy with your lawyer at some point. If you never have privacy with your lawyer, how could you ever prepare for trial? Isn't that a natural bias or negative externality that's going to affect fundamental fairness if you've never been able to have a confidential discussion with your lawyer? And unfortunately, we hear these stories all the time. And most of the time, since it's not a high priority trial, it's easy for the media and the powers that be kind of go, oh, no, don't worry. It's just that one county. In Georgia, we have 159 counties. It means 159 sheriffs with 159 different jail policies. Some of them are really professional. I can highlight some very excellent places that ensure constitutional rights are followed. Then we've had a sheriff go to prison because they used a restraint chair as punishment, which is 100% wrong. It's not even questionably wrong. And they fought it all the way to the end when everybody else went, hold on, you're a sheriff. You can't tie people, but that's the playing field. So am I surprised that deputies were able to record these conversations? Unfortunately not. But yeah, it's gross. It's disgusting. Well,
and what was really gross about it, kind of circling back around to my point, is that Judge Gold didn't have an issue. What she said was moving forward, you know.
Classic.
But that's classic. Not really what happened.
The death by a thousand cuts is an easy excuse for judges, because we've gotten to a point, and you know this very well from the cases that you've been involved with, that minor mistakes are almost always forgiven because there's so many rules. We now have an appellate log that is hundreds of thousands of cases. It is impossible for everybody to know all the rules, especially when they're open to interpretation. And trial now means more difficult judgment calls by everybody involved than ever before. That has created so many carve-outs for the little things. So it is no big deal, because it didn't affect the result of the trial. It was overwhelmingly guilty. So just because we trampled on one of the constitutional rights shouldn't upset all this work that we all did, right? There's lots of appeals opinions like that, that basically whitewash away known and open constitutional violations, but because they didn't rise to a level that really we should all care, hey, just get washed away. That's what's happened with Richard Allen, but in a really more substantial way. And the question is going to be whether he crosses that threshold and how, that either a state or federal judge is going to step in and rip this bandit off and figure out exactly what actually happened. Because I believe there could be a whole nother story, but that's, yeah.
But it's just another example to me of Judge Gold. When it came to protecting Richard Allen's Sixth Amendment right, she was just never there when it came to that decision. Of course, the decision to remove both of his attorneys. And then now we're seeing it here, I guess is my point, at arraignment, sort of just overlooking the. And I'm sorry, because was Joel Gold there for the arraignment?
Actually, I was going to say, Gold wasn't there at the beginning.
No, I'm sorry, Gold wasn't there. I should say it's more of a track record of Richard Allen's Sixth Amendment rights, though, being trampled, really. I'll call it what I see.
Yeah, it's the fact that he deserves his rights, just like you, just like me. And if you talk to people about infringement of, say, First Amendment or Second Amendment rights, whoa, we get real touchy the moment you start taking away guns and freedom of speech. Man, there, do not infringe on. Well, what about your right to privacy when you're talking with your criminal defense attorney because we charge you with a crime? Do we enforce that rule quite as aggressive? Judge Gull has decided no, and I blame her. I want to preface this with, I blame her. I believe she is wrong. But like many judges and many people in all parts of professions, it's safe and easy for her to take a pathway that's been designed to encourage and make convictions efficient and lean into the powers that have been used by other judges and combine them into a treatment for Richard Allen specifically. And while each of these denials and changes and rulings may stand independently on its own for one reason or another, the combination of them all means that Mr. Allen right now, in my opinion, is sitting convicted of a crime that I don't believe he committed. And I think that it's a cacophony of indefensible issues that brought him to this point. And shows that the system is a bully when it wants to be. It can be a bully.
Yeah, I think I saw that. And I don't know if I'm prepared to say whether he did it or didn't do it. But from the evidence I've seen, he didn't even have the chance to defend himself because Judge Gold did not allow third party culprit. And we weren't talking throwing mud up against the wall like what's happening at Karen Reed, you know, the dog.
No. This is a different.
We are talking about a FBI agent who wrote an affidavit that showed probable cause that Ron Logan did this crime. And then, furthermore, we're going to talk about this confession, but I want to do the confession last. I want to do kind of the easier points that to me are black and white, as you well spelled out. What about the fact that no attorney was there when they made the decision to put him in maximum security prison pre-conviction?
You know, it's very real because of the rights that everybody that's involved in the process kind of just takes as this is what's going to happen. Presence of counsel looks to be a problem here. And when you combine it all, when you look at how the system acts as a whole, we're limited in filings to the most specific and provable examples of what is happening. It doesn't include everything you hear and feel because those are really hard to translate into words and put them on paper. So when you read a complaint that has three enumerations about this is a bad treatment, this is a bad treatment, this is a bad treatment, those were the three that were most able to be put into words and most able to have someone support with testimony. What's not there is your gut. What's not there are the thousands of other little things that God observed that can only come out through an inspection of the allegations. And that's through testimony. Because you just can't include everything that happened. It's like trying to explain your gut feeling in writing. It's really hard to explain all of the totality of the circumstances. And this is another example of time and time again where Richard Allen has been mistreated and prevented from having his full rights protected by a system that he has no ability to effectively appeal, stop, protect himself from. No, he is at the system's complete mercy.
Yeah, it's true. And would you really, for me, somebody who is more right, somebody that is more prosecution oriented, when I see the lawyer, the Sixth Amendment right trampled, that one really gets to me. I mean, that's when my eyes go like this. Whoa, this just can't happen. See it over and over.
Yeah, different political persuasions are affected and impacted differently from the same situation. And what you see with a lot of my more law enforcement, more conservative friends is the deep respect for law and order that is the fundamental social contract. We don't steal. We don't fight. We don't shoot. We have property rights. You don't go in and shoplift. If you shoplift, I get to do so. Like, these are rules that are very central to a more conservative perspective. And what happens when that perspective is confronted by what we see in Richard Allen, the foundation for that is cracked, because the only way you can trust the rules is if the rule enforcers are good people and if the accountability is honest and would treat you the way it treats them. So when you see the betrayal of the system itself malfunctioning, my most conservative and especially my libertarian friends, who I'm very deep with a lot of the people in the libertarian universe, that to them is why we can't have nice things. And it's the big question of how do you ensure that the system that we've designed so well runs as perfect as possible? Because when the system's firing on cylinders, there is nothing better that will enforce your rights. You will get your constitutional rights. There are counties where you know you're going to get your constitutional rights. They're going to jam them right down your throat into prison. Like, we know that, Ken. This is different. This is, we're not going to give you your constitutional rights in a way that anybody should be able to automatically expect when dealing with a state agency.
Right. I want to move on to the next point, and this has to do with the facts regarding the white van. As you recall, we have all of these confessions. Confessions, by the way, that didn't occur until months of incarceration, being in a box for 23 hours a day. One day you're a CVS clerk, you live in a nice middle-class house, you have a wife, you have a daughter, you're going to the bar playing pool on Fridays and Saturdays, you have a normal life. And in an instant, you are in a prison cell, you can't get out, and you're medicated. They medicated him on drugs. And we saw, I don't care what people wanted to say, oh, he was treated fine. No, just take those circumstances and say he was fine. I challenge anybody to lock themselves. And by the way, with no light control or anything like that, you know, how long you sit in the darkness, 23 hours a day. The other thing is, I challenge anybody who hasn't been to a maximum security prison, you need to go. Because the first thing you do is you walk in and it smells somewhere in between a litter box, body odor, and disinfectant. Just imagine.
Overpowering bleach, but the smell remains.
The smell remains. It's a smell I'll never unsmell because I've been there too many times. Yep. And really the isolation that many of these people deserve. I mean, put them in. But if you're not convicted, I mean, I don't want to digress because.
No, we could talk about the humanity, but you're very right to highlight the idea that solitary confinement, especially the more aggressive where you literally have no light control, there's stuff. It is psychologically traumatizing. It's studied. It is why it's a war crime. It's why even in these maximum security prisons, there are strict regulations on how it is applied because of its thoroughly documented deleterious effects on the brain. And the idea that they're popping this CVS clerk who went, just like you're saying, from a humdrum existence to the deepest, darkest prison that we can create. We dope them up. If you've ever dealt with someone who's gone through a medication mental health shift, totally unpredictable. Lock them up in a light list. Yeah, you get them to say anything. And the idea that a state agent would stand up and go, yeah, this is reliable, that begs credulity from the beginning. But then you see these additional issues on top of it, and someone somewhere should have stepped in and said, whoa, this thing's, if it's not already broken, it's about to fall apart fast. We got to do something. And they didn't.
Well, with these confessions, I always said, I want to see if he confesses to things that were unknown. That's what you're really waiting for. Not only did he not confess to one thing that was not known, even the van, I'm going to argue, but he confessed to so much that were patently false. I mean, it was insane. That
overproduction is the product of I'll say anything to get stimulus back, whether it's better treatment, whether it's a chance of escape, whatever it is that the psychs have set up as a stimulus response. But you literally could get him to say, I'll go kill a political leader. I'll go dance naked in the street. They will continue to overproduce. And that's where some of these details come. And as you know, a thorough interrogation has falsities built into it in order to self-correct, increase accuracy from what you're asking. Because if you're just asking for a confession, people say anything. It's why it's, you know, has value, but doesn't have value. And then you've got the fact that we've got so many of these, and we haven't even gotten into the big confession yet. But back to the white van, yet again, a pretty big issue, a big timeline issue, does not work for the state. And I could see how someone would consider that offered up in bad faith.
But what's going to really happen with all of that, Schiff? Because didn't the jury have a chance to look it over, you know, all the detailed reports and things? And so it's not like, in a sense, was it really hidden or was it just properly vetted?
Yeah, we've said it a million times. Trial has nothing to do with a search for truth. Trial has to do with a jury evaluating what a judge will let them see. Mm-hmm. And that's really where the decisions get made. Testimony is awesome. It moves juries left, right, and center. But pretrial motions, limiting, motions in limine, the prevention of mentioning third parties in this case, because I know everybody wants to get to third parties and Odinism, third parties and the local share. And man, is there stuff there? I've seen so much. I'm going to say there's certainly something out there, whether it's valid, relevant. Man, I couldn't tell you, but there's definitely something there. We're not talking about that third party, though. We're talking about this other third party, the third party where there happens to be a whole lot of other associated stuff. And that stuff never got disclosed because Brady is a joke and it doesn't work. And it completely eviscerates your right to actually defend yourself. And this is an example of Brady being used punitively by the state to ensure a fair trial was never going to happen. It's why I continue to believe Brady is anti-constitutional and anti-libertarian. It's awful. It is absolutely awful to trust the state on their honor to give you all the evidence they have.
Well, I got to say, Schiff, I mean, in my experience, and I know it's federal and it's a little bit different. It just
very different. But worlds apart.
That's what I've always said, just on so many issues. But trying to relate down to this, it is sickening. There's so much I know about this case because one of the original officers at that crime scene and hopefully that person comes on the show. I've been working with them closely. You wouldn't believe all that went on. It is unbelievable. And I really, and then I think it becomes a situation where, I don't know if cover up's the right word, but they're just trying to cover up their incompetence. And I have no idea why they picked Richard Allen to be their scapegoat.
No. And unfortunately, and you recognize this, being a professional who served and now being retired, it's things like this that take our highest quality public servants and doesn't jam them out the door, but it certainly points at the pathway, because they're here dedicating themselves to public service, and the vast majority of public servants are just excellent people. But when they see the system fail to operate to the level of competence that they demand from themselves, that's really hard for them to consume. It is, because they don't want to be part of a system that allows fundamental breaches like this from him. You can always forgive a bad personal choices. It's why the cheating and, you know, some of the stiff, I mean, I get it. Basic sin is very tempting. But the fundamental issues really sit down low in a lot of law enforcement, and especially in federal, who tend to be the highest trained, the most serious, the most experienced. Not to insult state law enforcement, but federal law enforcement is pretty top shelf. It's why people want to go there. When you see some of this stuff filtering in that context, it's even more sad. And I'd love to know a lot more about the FBI investigation, because I personally believe the FBI investigation was more broad, identified a bunch of stuff that the state then declined to pursue for whatever reason the state did, probably wanting to go in one direction over another for very specific reasons.
Oh, there was absolutely a, you know, who's in charge here? And the bottom line is the venue, like state, for sure. The FBI has to be invited into these investigations and ask for their help, where we open up a case and we help them with all our resources. And in this case, essentially, it came down to the FBI thought Ron Logan and the state didn't. And to me, that was where the pissing match came in at. And state,
and it's the right phrase. It is. Like, it really is.
You know, foul mouth person. It's actually what happened, and what we see happen so often. It's
got so much. Absolutely, absolutely. And remember, not to get too far afield, this week we saw an executive order that stopped all the civil rights investigations by the Fed, which those people tended to be really good battling local problems of corruption that exist throughout America that none of us say don't exist or not, they exist. All those investigations stopped this week. That's a big deal. If you care about this stuff, pay attention to what's happening as we redefine law enforcement nationally during our recent golden age that began, because this stuff is on the table.
And I do want to just get too far afield, but just to let everybody know, the FBI handled what we call civil rights violations. We actually had squads that were civil rights squads. So you didn't work anything else if you were in that squad but civil rights. Somebody like me, who was in a resident agency, we handled every crime that occurred in our territory. So we were kind of a jack of all trades, really master of none in some cases. So you had your case. But those civil rights, that's what they do. And to think, it's mind-boggling to me.
I have a lot of law enforcement friends that are very concerned about how the last little bit's gone because of various issues. And I don't want to get too far afield, but it's a different age. It's going to be new. I'll tell you, from the criminal defense perspective, it has made our job's a little easier the more people are cynical about how well the government does or does not operate. And when you see how do you win the unwinnable case and things like that, where we go as criminal defense attorneys, Lots of times it's attack the facts, attack the fact. Well, sometimes you don't have all the facts. The facts you have are really limited or have been changed or lied to. And it doesn't become defending the facts. It becomes putting the system on trial and reframing the case into fundamental fairness issues with the jury, knowing that the state has overwhelming factual evidence and testimony. So innocence is going to lie in testing the system that brought that defendant to trial and whether that system is fundamentally fair or not. And that because jurors are absolutely allowed to decide when fundamental fairness rules and regulations have been broken. And that's how you get some pretty wild results in criminal law.
But I will say, Schiff, and this is where you and I will always have a little bit of a chasm, probably. I find it just horrible when I see cases where instead of when there's no facts you can go against because the facts are so strong that you start to annihilate or try to annihilate the system. I think both of us see the case of Richard Allen as facts were bad and the system was bad.
It's a combination.
Yeah.
And you're right. And as you highlight, if you see the defense focusing on the system rather than the facts, it'll tell you a lot about the facts.
Yeah, it tells you a lot about the facts. I want to go to this water damage on the phone. And I remember when this came up, of course, because this
plugging,
was sealed, if you will. And, it was none of us got to see the trial. It was so frustrating to rely on people there giving their opinions of what happened, trying to take shorthand on everybody. It was just so incomplete, I think, for many of us even to respond to. And this was one of these aha moments, in a sense, because you had the experts saying these headphones were plugged into the phone, right? And then somebody else said, well, it could be water damage or mud damage. Now you have another expert saying, no, that water, and it's funny because when you go to turn in your phone, and you just want a new phone, the first thing they do is do this test and say whether water damaged your phone.
Multiple ways that they have devised to tell water exposure of different. And it's multiple different ways. Yeah.
And they said no in this case. Yeah. That, right. It was just a hypothesis that that could cause this misreading. But the facts were that there was no water or mud or sludge or anything else that could have caused that.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
It's a plug sensor. And the idea is, again, where you're going to focus your attempts on the defense and what is necessary for the state to prove their case is integrity with evidence. And what this entire issue just highlights is sloppy issues, sloppy handling, battle of the experts, can't tell you which way is up, which way is down, can't keep their story straight. These jurors have to go home and sleep with their decision. So if you can show them, hey, there are problems with what the state has sworn to being correct. We're not saying we have smoking gun evidence that the state's wrong. We're saying there are other things the state doesn't want you to consider. It could be concluded that the state's argument isn't perfect or isn't beyond a reasonable doubt because there's this idea of another person getting access to the phone and evidence manipulation. And when you then combine that with allegations of some inside cookery, not firm, not declared, not proof, but allegations, the gap of reasonable doubt just gets that little bit bigger. And the state screws up by not sticking to policy, not following their own manuals, not following the training, taking shortcuts, not being able to say with complete confidence what exactly happened because they don't know. And when the defense has an opportunity to explore that, that's where you find reasonable doubt. And Judge Gull wouldn't let people talk about squat diddly in this case.
When you look at these four, just the ones we've discussed, Shift, What do you think is the most problematic for the prosecution of the four, we touched on?
It's going to depend on kind of what state you're on and how you're, and I don't know Indiana as well as I wish. I wouldn't get Richard Cameron or something like that. The procedural issue of proceeding without a lawyer present, that may have a very clear pathway that saves an appellate court from having to deal with any of it, which remember, appellate court has to look at politics as well and go, hold on, hold on. It's not even get to arguments 2 through 50. All right, argument one, that's a big one. Did you guys arraign him without a lawyer? Yeah. Well, that ruins everything. And you know that. Did you fix it? No. Why but not?
How good are the appellate lawyers going to be, Schiff?
How brave is the Court of Appeals going to be? It's not a how good are the appellate lawyers. They're going to make very reasonable they're probably going to say something along the lines of, the right to counsel is defined in these 10 seminal cases from our state. And they're almost all going to say, you have an absolute right to counsel is one of the most important. Why? Lawyers write those laws. We're going to be present for stuff. We're going to be really certain that we get paid if we can. So we're going to be there and we're going to probably have very little sunlight in ways that we can't be present. And those cases are probably 50 to 150, 200 years old. And those are the kind of ones where it's like, yeah, we can't do anything like that. You want to go back on 100 years? You've got a right to counsel. That is absolutely firm can be. The state stupidly, openly, nakedly violated it. Then the state didn't go back and use the appropriate remedial measures. Then the state compounded it by blah, 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 having a case, and now we're at appeal. So unfortunately, we're going to have to use the remedy of, and that's kind of one of those things that then guess who never screws up arraignment again? Prosecutors in Indiana for the rest of time. You know, I think as a baby lawyer, we all have that thing that we get burned on. In my court, it was establishing venue in misdemeanor cases because you have to say, and where did this occur? Oh, and inside Fulton County, or they'd say in Atlanta. And we'd have to say, well, and that's all within the bounds of Fulton County in Georgia. Yes, that is. Because you've got to establish venue. It's mandatory. It's necessary. Guess what happens when the state doesn't do it? My baby defense attorney would stand up and win their first objection. They would stand up and go, judge, never established venue, case dismissed. And guess what? Judge would burn everything up. Yep, didn't establish venue. Dismissed.
So, Schiff, you think actually the first two issues to do with the lawyers not being present with the incarceration issue and at arraignment, that those are the biggest issues to overcome for the prosecution in an appellate environment.
But we haven't gotten, of course, to the best one. We have saved.
Oh, no, I'm holding that one back. Because
why don't we jump on that before we run out of time at 6?
Yeah,
because I gotta get into this.
Yeah, definitely. That right now, but first, I have to let you know that Aura is decided to. I get to represent Aura, and I was so happy to get this particular opportunity. So this is the shortest commercial on Aura, but it was something I really believed in. And essentially, it's an antivirus for your computer, for your phone. It's identification protection. It monitors your transaction. It monitors your credit, VPN safe, scam calling protection. If you are looking into that to protect your devices, please, you'll see a little clip in the top right corner on your screen with a little code. Check it out. See what you think of Aura. I think they're fantastic. Schiff, let's get back into this with the most important
one. Just add, we see more scams every year. Every year, there are more scams. They are scams. You are what they want to steal people. So, yeah. Back to what's going on. So the big issue, the big issue
to me, how
2017.
In 2017, in June 2017, this confession.
Brutal.
at where Ron Logan, who again, the FBI, and I've posted this everywhere on my Twitter, we've talked about it here, there is a long list of probable cause and reasons. His phone was there. It was his land. He had the time to do this. There's a woman who he almost tried to kill, I think with a screwdriver or some other weapon. I mean, he was a violent, violent guy. He lied about his alibi. He actually got somebody else to lie about his alibi and make up this, you know, whole thing about where he was at. The guy just, it reeks as at least somebody who should be considered as a third party culprit. And now we find out about the confession. Tell us legally where we're at here, Schiff.
Yeah, this, he was, as the youth would say, mad sus. Very mad sus, because like you're saying, the FBI was all over this guy. There was no question. It's his land. He knows it. It was all kind of investigation. He had a background that certainly didn't provide a lot of comfort to investigators. This guy would be a prime suspect automatically off the top. And he was, while serving on a probation revocation in June of 2017, he finds himself in a cell. After the cellmate is out, or actually, sorry, I believe he writes it while he's incarcerated, but then there's a little bit more play afterwards. The cellmate writes a very detailed letter that includes a very pertinent piece of relevant information showing that he had basically admitted to the killing of these two girls. And in that confession, not only does it make sense as to time, place, manner, but the detail of the box cutter being used was included. This is in 2017. No one knew about that box cutter outside the prosecution team until trial. It had never been disclosed. Richard Allen.
And furthermore, Schiff, just to back you up on this, obviously, the box cutter is just a huge wow moment. But remember, everybody back then thought they didn't know how they were killed. No one knew how they were killed. That very detail.
It was the biggest, most important secret the state had to keep, because they kept it outside of public knowledge because of the horribleness. And the confession gets made, gets sent in. It is recorded. It's locked. It exists. Yet, never finds its way to the defense. So now Judge Gull, in this omnibus series of motions, has to look at a, what assumedly, legitimate, independent confession with confirming details unknown to the public by someone who was a prime suspect, but is now unfortunately dead.
Yeah, and it all makes sense in the confession. Oh, yeah. Come on down the hill,
right.
Horses, right? He wanted to take him to the barn. That, you know, Libby wasn't particularly going for it, but Abby was. And then, you know, he puts the hand on somebody's shoulder, and then, you know, Abby comes to help. And you know, he said there was no sex involved in this. This was not. And nobody knew that at the time. Back then, nobody knew if they were sexually assaulted. They were still determining a lot. It's so unbelievable, Chef.
And it makes sense from the criminology point of view, because a lot of crimes that are otherwise inexplicable start with something very small that otherwise might be innocuous or just a very minor thing. And then as soon as the person realizes what's happened, they double down, they lean in and lose control and just keep breaking the law. So it may have started with something and we'll never know.
And this guy was considered,
which would be considered egregious and bad, but not something that would ever lead to the murder of two kids. But then what happens when one of the little girls says, I'm calling the cops? Oh, I'm going to put my hand around her mouth. Oh, my. No, let me explain. Then one of the girls starts to, who knows? But the moment he was out of control, or any person who finds themselves in this situation could choose to make really reprehensibly indefensible, violent choices when they think, due to their background, prior experiences with law enforcement, maybe, that they're not going to get a fair shake no matter what these girls. And then next thing you know, we're here. Makes a lot of logical sense to me.
A lot of sense. And the other part is that just always screamed out to me, on his private land. This was a crime. People undressed, people redressed, movement of bodies. He thought he could hide them, which I still think is why that brush was pulled over. I mean, all that Odin stuff.
Yeah, Jen, ridiculous. Jen, if we just had a murder occur down the street and there were two bodies on the piece of land and the guy that owned the land was sketchy, just that's it. Most police officers could still get a warrant. Like, it may not be for murder, but you're going to get them on something to lock them down and do the investigation. And really, you own the land where the bodies are found and can't provide unbelievably clear explanations. It's pretty reasonable that you would be a suspect. And yeah, there could be easily constructed probable cause to think you were somehow involved in the dead people on your land, and now you won't, like, it doesn't win a trial, but it starts an investigation.
Yeah, it is just another factor, because how brave do you have to be to drag and coerce two bodies onto somebody else's land, 1,000 feet from their front door, you know, and you're going to commit this horrible crime?
It's nuts. Jen, I hate to cut this off, but I have my weekly sweet old lady family call where I'm going to parade myself and a teenage daughter in front of two sweet old ladies who look forward to this every week.
And this wonderful show. Thank you so much for being here.
I love it. You know, we disagree like nobody's business on something. I have deep respect for everything you do. I love your audience. I love interacting with them. Please, anybody... Jen knows that I'm on Twitter with her all the time. I'm going to stay out of some parts of these conversations because some of y'all are crazy, but I will pay attention to other parts of it. But some of y'all are something. All right, Jen. Thank you so much.
Right. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right. Bye. Thank you. Oh my gosh. I love having Schiff on. He makes it entertaining. We had a little bit of a where I would talk and I wouldn't hear whether he was done or not. So I feel terrible because I think I trampled on him a little bit. I hope I didn't. I always love my guests to have full reign of being able to talk. But there was a delay is what I'm trying to say. But I really appreciate all of you being here. You know, this case I will likely always struggle with. I'm just going to be honest. I don't think justice was served because I don't think he was treated fairly. That's just the facts. And from my vantage point, I've gone over this over and over again. We talked a little bit about it here, but this is kind of one of the biggest ones. How can you not allow the third party culprit defense for a jury to consider? They can look it all over. If they think it's rubbish, if they think the confession wasn't good, if they think Ron Logan didn't do it because he was too old, if they think all of that, fine. But they should be able to make that defense because this isn't rumor. This isn't conjecture. This isn't just throwing mud up against the wall. This is an FBI investigation that was conducted, and their lens went to Ron Logan, not to Richard Allen. I will leave it there because I'm donned in my Kansas City Chief red and white. And I do want to thank, though, really quick, my mods who always do the most incredible job. For anybody who is a member, I just saw an 8-month membership come up on Marianne. Thank you all. It means, I can't believe it's been 8 months. It means the world to me, and just all of you being here means so much to me. I look through all these questions and comments, and I try to respond as best I can, even if it's just to hit, you know, the like for me personally, and then I always hit a thumbs up like too. But I thank you. We'll continue to bring guests like Schiff to talk about these cases and go over this. I don't know what's going to happen in this case long-term. Short-term, in my opinion, Judge Gohl is going to quash all of this and it's not going to matter, but it might at the appellate level. You heard Judge Schiff or Lawyer Schiff say he thought at the appellate level, it's going to come down to the brazenness of that appellate court. And even when we saw the Supreme Court of Indiana overturn Judge Gohl's ruling when she removed his attorneys, when we saw that, they did it, they treaded very lightly. You know, they weren't at all derogatory toward Judge Gohl really in any way, even though to me, it's such a slap in the face, as you can imagine. You're a judge, you make a ruling, and you get it overturned at the Supreme Court level. That is a huge slap in the face, quite frankly. And we'll see if the appellate, if the appeals are successful, but I'll never feel like justice was served in this case until he gets a fair trial. And nothing, I'm not saying anything bad toward these jurors. They only had so much to work with. Let me just check chat really quick. Let's see. I respect and remember. Let's see. Boy, it's coming through quick, but I hope you can, I'm going to be following this really closely again on Twitter, where that's where I really put up a lot of documents here. I like to get a lot of information out, but you'll see documents and everything. I always, you know, for me, when I watch a YouTube channel and they're always going back and forth and showing a lot of stuff, I feel like it interrupts kind of the narrative. So I don't do that a lot here. But I do appreciate each of you. If you liked what you saw, please subscribe and press the like button. That's what they say you're supposed to say. I never say it. But I thank each and every one of you for being here. And I can't wait to read your comments. Until next time, may the Kansas City Chiefs win tonight. And most importantly, may justice be served for Richard Allen.